This is Fire Through Spirit with Corby Mittline. Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Here's your host, Corby Mittline.
Welcome all of my wonderful listeners. Oh, do you have a treat tonight? There are certain people who are true magicians, and this has nothing to do with Harry Potter, and it has nothing to do with do you want to be a wizard? They are people who understand the depth of the world, blood and bone, and they can help us understand it, change it, dance with it. And I have the enormous good fortune to have known my guest tonight, Andrew Steed, for a few years now. And he is one of those people. He was born in England in 1963. He studied communication and theater arts in London. He's traveled extensively through Europe, Asia, North and South America, gathering stories and illuminating experiences. And this has allowed him to learn how to connect and communicate with people from all walks of life, many different areas. And one of the things that he does best, he is a premier storyteller. And this is not like the no kidding, there I was. These are the stories that resonate with all of us. These are the stories that no matter what culture you go to, the archetypes are the same. The storylines have the same kind of intrinsic meaning and healing. And so I asked Andrew to come on tonight to discuss his fabulous new book called Powering Up Our Life Stories. Andrew, I'm glad that you're making time for us. Where am I calling you today? Where have your wanderings taken you?
Oh, well, thank you, Corby. Lovely introduction. I really appreciate that. I am in East Berlin in Pennsylvania. I arrived here on Friday night, around about midnight, and I will be in the United States for 3 weeks before heading to Canada and then back to Scotland to do some more important work in the Isles.
Now, I'm delighted that you're back here in the States for a little bit. I've loved your books. I think the first was Living on the Edge, then the first Santa, and now this one. So the question I've got for you is, how did this book tell you that it wanted to come out first? Because I imagine that you don't sit down and say, well, I have these 12 books and I guess I'll do this one. But they kind of come knocking against your rib cage and going, oi, my turn.
Yeah, very much so. Few years, I've given myself the luxury of taking winter as my downtime because I'm so busy come spring through autumn. And winter's a time for me just to ingest and digest, to light a fire indoors and sit by the fire and be creative, allow spirit to flow through of what wants to be said, what wants to be told. So this winter, when I sat down, I knew I'd given myself some time to write, and I had four or five ideas that were all knocking. This was the one that literally started flowing onto the page when I said, "Okay, my time is to write." It literally just started to flow, and it's based on years of working these ways, helping people to reweave and reclaim their stories, and the world. The world requires us. It requires us to have courage, to stand up and to take responsibility for this phenomenal thing we call life, and not be so afraid of living. And I had noticed in working with people how people can very easily get stuck in the story. And this is a way for us to shine light into those dark spaces and have more freedom in our lives.
You talk about shamanic work, and my listeners go from, you know, ABC level to PhD level. How does shamanic work fit in with storytelling for those that don't understand or are not familiar with it?
Okay, well, firstly, I would say that stories are inherently shamanic. We are always all of the characters in all of the stories. I refer to it in my book, you know, sometimes people relegate the shanaki, the storyteller, to the children's tent. Stories are certainly for children, but they were never meant solely for the children. They were meant for all of the community, because we can learn so much. We are stories. We come from stories and we are stories. So in living a shamanic lifestyle, in connecting with the upper world, the middle world, and the lower world, that's part of my role. You don't have to. You don't have to follow a shamanic lifestyle to be able to reclaim a story. And if you do, it just gives you a different perspective. And I love that, because life is full of perspectives. And that's how we can shift that shadow by looking at things in a new way.
All right. So not all bards are shamans. I just want to make that clear to people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, no?
I would say there's a shamanic quality to the, it's like what is a healer, Corby? Because, you know, my mother has exceptional healing qualities, and I've always thought that those have been passed down the feminine line, and because she didn't have any daughters, she passed those healing qualities to me. She, for ages, would have said that she wasn't a healer, and yet she has these intrinsic qualities within her. So as you start telling stories, it opens us up to perspectives. That's what stories are. But most people brush across them so quickly, Corby, that they don't delve into the pool to start going, okay, there's pieces in here and there's more in here that first meets the eye. And if I start weaving with them, wow, look what can happen. And I can move and I can shape. And it opens me up in many, many different ways. And I think that's a shamanic perspective that takes us to an altered state of reality, which we can then support ourselves in this reality. I hope that makes sense.
It does. So let's look at the book, Powering Up Our Life Stories. How is it constructed? Who can use it? What's been your experience with this? You know, introduce us to the book. Hi, book. This is audience. This is book.
Okay, well, first thing to say is that if you're ever sharing medicine of value, you need to have stirred it in your own cauldron first. So I started reclaiming stories many, many moons ago. And then about 9 years ago, I started helping teenagers reclaim their stories. And then I started taking this into community groups, working with adults.
Okay, let me stop you right there. Explain reclaiming. Because that seems to be a very key word here, yep. And it could have different meanings. So how are you using it?
Okay, so it's looking at the story from a different perspective. Let me give you an example. I was working with a young woman in a high school, 16 years old, several years ago, and I introduced her to this concept of reweaving a story, telling the story in a different way, so she could look at it from a totally new perspective. And what she chose to take a look at, what challenged her in her life, was that when she was born, her parents had told her she was a mistake, that it was an unplanned pregnancy, and though they were glad to have her, she was a mistake, and that's what she heard. I'm a mistake. Now, if you go through life believing that you're a mistake, that you're not wanted, even if someone's saying, oh yeah, but we did want you and we're glad you're here, that piece is what had tethered her to a place where she did not feel empowered. And so what I said to her is in the art of reclaiming, looking at it in a different perspective, I said, let me give you a scenario that I went through when I was a teenager. My dad told me that my brother had been planned. Me, on the other hand, I was the result of him going up the pub, having a few too many drinks and coming home, and my mother and him made love, and 9 months later, out I pop. And so I was a mistake. And I remember the day he told me that, and I don't know where it came from, Corby. It was just a piece of ancient wisdom that was a truth inside of me. Because I looked at my dad and I said, well, Dad, you might think you chose to have me, but from my perspective, I chose you as my dad. I chose to come through you. Now, when I gave this perspective to the young lady, she went, I don't know if I can own that. I said, well, sit with it. Just see where it, you know, it fits in your writing. And she sat with it, and then she wrote a story. And she used that philosophy, that idea of her choosing her parents rather than her parents having her. And she reclaimed this story. Now, that was grand in the first place, but it was about 2 months later that the story really showed its fruits to me, because she got in touch and she said, Mr. Steed, I just want to thank you for helping me to walk through the challenge of reclaiming that story. Since I've done that, what I want you to know is I'm an athlete. I run for the school. And since I've reclaimed my story, my times have all got much faster, because nothing is holding me back. I am now able to be free and to run much more quickly. And that's what reclaiming does. When we're no longer stuck in the original blueprint of the story, the piece of the wound, when we shift that and we become the hero, we can take the confidence of that hero and move at a different vibration.
Now, there's a historical perspective from reclaiming. This is not just, you know, new age, 21st century. Oh, I came up with that idea.
Right.
So how far back does this go? Reclaiming, was it something that ancestors used? Was it something that was intrinsic to their life experience?
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that I'm not really a new age person, Corby. I'm an old age person. I work the indigenous ways, and the roots are in the Gaelic and Brythonic traditions of storytelling. This is part of the medicine that that my ancestors would have worked with, and it's why, whether it's personal stories or myths, it's why to me they're so important, because they're multi-layered. I work with myths, and I find myself in the myths, because I am all of those characters, as we all are. And when we start going between the folds and realizing that these carry so much more wisdom than when we just skim across the top, you know, it's like anything of value, it requires us to sit a while and just submerge ourselves in it, and just to feast at the table with it. What happens a great deal in society, I watch, is we run from one experience to the next experience, and sometimes we skim so much across the surface that we don't sit with the roots. And it's when we sit with the roots and we work with those, and if something has started to decay, if we can re-thread it and plant it in a different way, then now we've got fruits that are healthy rather than fruits that are rotten. And that is the essence.
You seem to feel that this book is especially needed now, but it's not just for the adults. You work enormously with young people, and some of the stories you gave me were heartrending and phenomenal at the same time. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the book literally is for all ages. I would say from teens up. In the book, what I've looked at is I've looked at reclaiming stories that are lighthearted, moments that are embarrassing. We've all got that story that somebody somewhere likes to tell. You're sitting at a family gathering or you're out with friends and out comes this story that you just go, all right, dig the hole, let me jump in again because, yeah, I'm the one that's going to be bright red and wearing this story. Well, what if we looked at it in a different way? What if we're the hero? So I take people and guide them so that they don't have to feel like they're dying a thousand deaths with the embarrassing story. But then there's also stories within us, Corby, of abuse. When I go to an upper school or a high school and I'm looking in the eyes and the hearts of those youth, there's so many people in that room who have been abused, whether it's physically, mentally, sexually. Each of us has had challenging stories. And so often what we do is we brush them under the carpet. We push them deep down inside of us. And we don't want to face them. It's in the willingness to be real. You know, let me put it in the perspective from a young person, and it's a story that I have permission to tell. It's my daughter's story. My daughter and I were estranged for about 2.5 years, Corby. And she came home to me when she was 17, and she knocked on my door, and she had hit rock bottom. She had come from the hospital where she had tried to take an overdose. I didn't even know she was in hospital. I had no ideas that for 3 years she had been on medication for depression. And the reason I hadn't been told was because she said, you'd want to get me off the medication, Dad. And I said, you're right. I will help you get off that medication. I said, if you would like my help, I'm here to help you. And she opened up and told me her story. And she had gone into the darkest space that she could go into. And she had kept away from me because she said, Dad, your light was too bright and I was frightened of it. And so I took her to the mirror. And Louise Hay had taught me an exercise years ago, which was to take a look into your own eyes in a mirror and say, I love you. I really love you. And I said to my daughter, try this on. And she looked into the mirror and she said those words. And I said, how do you feel? And she said, Dad, I don't feel anything. Is that what you want to hear? And I said, Ailish, I said, try again and just see if you can get a semblance of a feeling. And so she said it again. And she says, how I feel, Dad, is I don't love myself. That's how I feel. And I said, now I've got a feeling we can work with it. Beautiful. It wasn't beautiful that my daughter didn't feel that she loved herself, but it was beautiful that she had a feeling, because that's where magic happens, in the feeling. And so we scaled it back to, I'm willing to learn to like you. And for the next 6 months, my daughter did her mirror work, and we rewove stories together. We sat and we talked, and we started looking at how we could untangle some of the threads of the story. Within 3.5 months, she was off her medication. She was 17 then, she's 22 now. I spent the morning with her this morning. She sparkles. She sparkles. She is full of life. She has clarity. She has paid her own way through college. She's debt-free. She's coming to live in the Isles. She's moving to England next year. I'm so proud of this young woman. But she did the work. She came and she did the work. And this book, I know will help anyone who picks it up to work with it. However, it's down to the person to do the work. You know, you can take the horse to the water, but as the steed here says, you have to be able to drink from it yourself.
If you're just joining us on Fire Through Spirit, my guest tonight is Andrew Steed, who has written an absolutely splendid new book to help you understand your own life and reclaim it as you see healing. And it's called Powering Up Our Life Stories. We're going to continue, of course, after break. But Andrew, I just want to ask one thing. Who are we if we're not our stories?
Yeah. Yeah, we are. We are. We are the stories that we've brought in from previous lifetimes, and some of them might need untangling, Corby. And we are patterns. We fit into patterns, and so it's about being conscious of the stories that are the driving force behind us. And if we are willing to let go of those pieces that no longer serve us and to be authentic with it, what we do is we claim freedom. And wow, that gives us power. It gives us energy and the passion and excitement to step into the next adventure.
And the thing that I hear that's important is changing the story doesn't deny the facts. It is your perception of the facts and how you choose to interpret them that is the reclaiming of the story. Am I on target here?
Absolutely. The phrase I use is it's all about changing our feces to fertilizer. It's about, you can step in the cow dung. And you can make that the story of the smell and I'm stuck in it, or you can go, well, this can be used for fertilizer, and it's happened anyway. I am the sum of all of my stories, and I am grateful on my stories because they make me who I am today. However, I'm not going to be stuck in the pieces that just keep me down. And we can talk more about that as we go on through this interview, Corby, because it's important to know how to release those pieces so we can fly free.
Before we go to break, Andrew, where are people going to find you? You do so much besides author books that you're a treasure waiting for people to discover. Where are they going to find all the good stuff?
Okay, well, you can go to my website, www.andrewsteed.com. You can find me on Facebook. Best way to get hold of me is email, asteed@andrewsteed.com, because I check my email every day, even when I'm on the road. I don't get to Facebook all of the time. And my website, I try to keep as update as possible. I travel a great deal. I work stateside, Canada. I'm in Jamaica in February. And if that calls anyone, it'd be lovely to see you there. And of course, I'm in the Isles, in England, Ireland, Scotland, and Wales. So if people get in touch with me, then I will stay in touch with them.
Again, if you're just joining us on Fire Through Spirit, Andrew Steed, shaman, storyteller, magician, alchemist, is talking to us about his new book,
which is a gorgeous, gorgeous piece that helps you reclaim your own life, called Powering Up Our Life Stories. And we're going to be talking more with Andrew about it on the other side of break. So don't go away. We'll see you in a minute.
You're listening to Empower Radio. For a complete archive of Fire Through Spirit, visit empowerradio.com. You can also subscribe to the podcast through iTunes and Stitcher Radio. More Fire Through Spirit with Corby Midline next on Empower Radio.
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called inventnow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on, and lost cats stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the Lost Cat Magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See, that's proof. You should go to the inventnow.org website too. But just remember one thing, don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Come to the forest. It's a place not so far away. A place where you don't have to mow the lawn or babysit.
I saw lizards and squirrels and bugs.
Ladybugs, caterpillars. It's really cool, actually.
A place where you don't have to make time for free time.
Lots and lots of kinds of species here.
Out here, you may even meet the mysterious creature known as the other you. The enchanted you.
It's magic what flowers do.
The adventurous you.
My favorite tree, yes, that one.
The free-to-be-me you. Ask your parents to take you to this not-so-far-away place. Come to the forest, where the other you lives. But first, stop by discovertheforest.org, a public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Do you get tired of styling your hair every day? And do you want a good hairstyle every day? Hi, I'm Sarah Schuster. I went on a website called inventnow.org, and after that, I decided to invent something too. Something called the Insta-Do. Just imagine, you just put it over your head like a helmet does, and you pick your hairstyle with the buttons on the side. And you can have instant hairstyle in seconds. People like it. People like Jeff Bart.
I like it.
And people like Kenneth.
It's this helmet thing, and it fits over your head, and it's great.
Thank you, Kenneth. You should go to inventnow.org, and it could help you come up with your own invention. After all, look at me on the radio now.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions, or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
This is Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Now, back to Fire Through Spirit with Corby Midline.
Welcome back, my friends. We are talking today with shaman, storyteller, teacher, magician, Andrew Steed. He's written three books, Living at the Edge of the World in the Center of Our Own Story, the first, Santa, and today we are discussing the new one, Powering Up Our Life Stories. Andrew, when people go from one book to one book to one book, there's usually some kind of an organic growth here. So how did the first two books power you into this third? How were they seeds for you?
Yeah, well, The first book was a great start off. You learn so much by doing. You learn so much by living. I have grown exponentially since I wrote that first book. Not only as a writer, but I've grown in my own authentic journey on this planet. So everything that you do in the world, it prepares you. So I would say that the first book was me setting off really not knowing what it was to write a book. Come the second book, I knew what that meant. I knew the hours that were required in the editing process, because that's very important. And what is it you want to say? Because the struggle, or the challenge, I'm going to say, not struggle, the challenge that a storyteller has is, in the olden days, we didn't write anything down. Because once you do, it's stuck. The indigenous way was not to write things down. And I love that approach. And yet here I am writing books. So it's so important when you do write it that it is what you really want to say. And are you conveying yourself from your heart so that your audience will be able to fall into it and really get what it is that you're looking to convey? This book is heart driven. And I'm excited on that. I'm really excited to hear the feedback from people, because I know as I've put my heart and my soul into weaving with this one, it's really come from spirit, Corby, incredibly spirit driven. And I think that as I step into my life and keep dancing this phenomenal dance on the planet, the clearer we get, the more willing we are to do our own work. You know, it requires me to go into my shadow, to take my light there so that I can help others to do this. And then the writings become clearer. I really feel that.
You told me, which I found very funny, that a rather left-brain cousin of yours actually went through the book and it did some stuff for him. Did you want to talk about that?
I do, because I love it. You know, I've got endorsements from Sandra Ingerman and Tom Cowan, who are both internationally respected shamanic practitioners on this planet. I've got a best-selling author from Canada, Agnes Toes Andrews, who says beautiful words, and Terry Smith, who is a professor and chair of religion at the Indiana University of Pennsylvania. Beautiful, beautiful endorsements, and then Adrian, my cousin Adrian. I was thinking to myself, it would be great to ask somebody from the corporate world to take a look. And so I contacted Adrian, and this is how. I was looking for, about 2.5 years ago, I was looking for my great-grandmother's grave up in Scotland. And I hadn't spoken to Adrian for 20 years. So I emailed him and asked him if he knew where my great-grandmother's grave was, and he didn't. However, in hearing from me, he looked me up, found my website, found that I'd written a book, The First Santa, and he ordered it. And I thought, that will be interesting. Area bank manager reading The First Santa. I wonder what he makes of it. Never heard from him. So I thought, well, maybe he loved it. Maybe he didn't like it. Who knows? At least he read it. Well, this year, I was heading to Canada, and a friend of mine who's a shamanic practitioner who lives in Canada, I asked her, can I bring anything over for you? And she said, I would love it if you would bring 3 pieces of flint. And I live in Scotland. There's granite, no flint. And I thought to myself, where can I get flint? My hometown of Bury St. Edmunds has lots of flint. That's where Adrian is. However, I wasn't going to see him. I love how the universe works. Within a couple of days, I got an invitation to a family reunion the day before I was to fly to Canada in Rugby in England. So I decided to rent a car, drive down to Rugby. And I emailed Adrian and I said, Adrian, would you be willing to go out and locate 3 pieces of flint for me? However, if you do this, I need you to do certain things. The first thing is I need you to ask the flint if it would like to go to Canada. And I could see him scratching his head going, ask a piece of flint, do you want to go to Canada? So I wrote in the email and I said, I know that might sound like an odd request, but if you've read the first Santa, you know that I live an alternative lifestyle, that I work with the land, with the sea, with the air, with the fires in many different ways. And it's important for you to ask, because some stones don't want to be picked up and touched. So if you're not sure what the stone's saying, just feel if it feels good in you to pick that stone up. And if it does, and the stone wants to go, then please make an offering. Either some whiskey, some oats, some butter, some cake, which is a Celtic thing to do, or a piece of your own hair. And if you don't feel comfortable doing any of this, not a problem. He wrote back to me and he said, Andrew, I love getting emails from you. He said, it just makes me smile in my heart. He says, I'll gladly go and ask if these stones want to go to Canada, but I don't have much hair. So when I met him, he was just bubbling because he'd never been asked to go and connect with nature in this way before. And he took his 15-year-old daughter, and it was a big shift for him. And so I said to him, look, I'm writing this new book. Do you want to take a look at it and just give me your perspective as a businessman? Do you think it would help people in your world? And he wrote, what a storyteller. Andrew has a brilliant and humble way of putting life experiences into perspective by the use of stories. A wonderful read that will no doubt put a smile on your face and help transform some of the challenges that life has thrown at you. And I think if you're a financial expert in the world and you get it, it's for everybody.
That's pretty amazing. Now, so I go and either I order it from you or I get it from Amazon or whatever, and I'm sitting at home with a book. Can I do it on my own, or do I need to do it in a group, or what do I do?
All right. First thing, by all means, go to Amazon and buy it. And if you want a signed copy, come to me. If I sell books on Amazon, Amazon take most of the profits. If I sell them through me, I get more money. So I love it when people buy books from me, because not only do you get me to sign it, I make an actual energetic connection with you, and I love that piece. When you get the book, this book, if you are in a book club, if you are running workshops, if you are a teacher, I would say go buy the book, read it, because it would be great to work with in groups. Do you need to work with it in a group format? No, you can work with this on your own. You can pick this book up and right from the word go, start working with it. But I'll tell you this much. This book is for a lifetime. You're not going to read this book and within the month have answered all of the questions, because at the end of each chapter, there are 5 journal questions. There are also 5 shamanic journey questions. If you are not a shamanic practitioner, then you can change those shamanic journey questions into journal questions. Or if it calls you, you can contact me and I'll put you in touch with a shamanic practitioner to help you explore those realms. The most important thing.
Can you explain a little bit about how you would use it as a shamanic question? Not everybody's going to understand that.
Yeah, I get that. The I discovered shamanism many, many moons ago, and it really spoke to my heart, because what it did was it opened me up to the lower world, the upper world, the middle world, to journey into non-ordinary reality and to connect with spirit guides, power animals, and get perspectives. I think the simplest way to say what is a shamanic journey, most people are familiar with guided meditation. If you go through guided meditation, you're kind of having a picture that you follow, and you go through a set journey. With shamanic journey, you kind of do that, but it's total surprise. You just don't know what you're going to get. And so you go into the realms and you'll get insight through working with guides. But what I would say is, if you're interested in shamanism, find a trusted practitioner. Find someone who knows what they're doing, who can hold space for you to explore. You know, if I was going to learn to fly an aircraft, I'd want to go with someone who knows what they were doing. And if I chose to fly an aircraft, I could learn to fly an aircraft. If you chose to learn about shamanism, it's there and it's open for you. But you really do need to work with somebody who knows what they're doing. As far as the book goes, you never need to journey shamanically in your life to work with this book, because you can look at all of those questions, be them the shamanic journey questions or the journal questions, and go, all right, let me just pick some things out of here and answer these to see how they apply to me and my life situation that will help shift some things. Does that make it clear for you, Corby, or is there more?
It does. No, that's perfect. Now, when you say shift some things, I'm kind of going to go on a tangent for a little bit. You mentioned Jamaica in passing, and it sounds like you're going there to do some healing and reclaiming of stories there of people that have passed.
Yes.
Okay, was that still considered retelling the story?
Absolutely. It's working with it in a different way. I'm headed to Jamaica, and the reason I'm going to Jamaica is to work with the Gaelic and Brythonic medicine. And that might seem strange. Why go to Jamaica? Well, I've already been to Barbados to do some work, and Jamaica is now calling. Quite simply, I found out in my own lineage, I always knew that my great-grandfather was a Scottish laird. However, I didn't know much about him because my grandmother, when she was born out of wedlock, and in that day and age, that was frowned upon. And her father, the Scottish laird, disowned her. And so she grew up not knowing her father and not being wanted by her father. On his deathbed, the Scottish laird left his fortune to my grandmother. And my grandmother refused the money. And she said it was blood money and she wanted nothing to do with it. Now, I didn't know what that meant, other than I thought that because he wouldn't accept her blood in life, that she wouldn't accept his blood in death. But as I was doing some family constellation work when I moved home to Scotland after living in the United States for 18 years, I found out some interesting pieces, which is that my great-grandfather and my great-great-grandfather, the Scottish lairds, were white slave traders. And a lot of people from the Isles were put into servitude and to slavery and shipped over to Barbados, to Jamaica, and to the Caribbean. And so I am going out in February to help sing home those displaced souls. And not only will I be working with the displaced Celts, I will be working with the slave traders and those who were part of the slave trade, for they are stuck in the story, and some of them have not crossed into spirit. So I will be working with the slave traders, those who were in slavery, those who bought the slaves, and, of course, as I work with the displaced Celts, I will also be working with the displaced Africans and the indigenous tribes who were on those islands, who had those islands taken from them by the people who invaded. So it's big, big work. And yes, there's a lot of work to do on this planet in helping people to find rest and find peace.
What I love when you describe it, your voice did not change. Slave owners, the slaves, the indigenous, there was no, these people are good people, these people are bad. There is universal compassion, however they wrote their stories. That is so important for people to understand if you're going to, I call it being the door. if they're caught in the gray spaces.
Yeah.
You call it singing them home.
Yep.
But if you are judging them, you cannot serve them.
And
it's so important.
Absolutely, Corby. And this comes right, this returns right to our own hearts. And that is the essence of the book. Because you see, whilst we are judging our own stories and we're stuck in them, we don't give ourselves and gift ourselves the freedom. We have to make peace with our story. And when we make peace with our stories, it doesn't change what happened. It changes the vibration of what happened. And now it gives freedom for life to come flowing in. And that means that I can actually serve on this planet and help others in ways that are beyond what I've even thought of so far.
It's very much what we do in Robert Schwartz's book. When I was a kid, my mother was horrible and evil, and look at the horrible things she did to me. When you dig deep, why did I choose this? Why is this necessary for my own soul's growth? You realize everybody had a part to play. And in the archetypes, you have the dark and the light. It doesn't mean that's who they are. It means it's the part that they were playing at that particular moment.
Yes. Yes. I told my daughter, I said, until you see the goddess in your mother, you will never see the goddess in you. When you open up to the goddess in your mother, you will see her in the fullness in you. And I believe that within our own shadows. You know, I write a chapter. Chapter 5 was about a holiday I went on with an organization when I was 9 years old, and it was a place of abuse, and the instigator of that abuse. The reason, let me back up. The reason I even shared that story, Corby, was that I met somebody when I was in my mid-20s who had been part of that story, who had been in that abusive situation that I was too. And I said to him, what did you make of our experience in Truro? And he said to me, what experience in Truro? And when I started to talk about it, he looked at me square in the eye and he said, that never happened. And I thought to myself, wow, not only have you locked it in a box and stuffed it inside of you, you've thrown away the key. This needs to be explored and it needs to be told, because so many people have thrown away the keys. And if we start opening up the box and we just want to blame the person who did this to us. What I've done in the story is I've looked at the instigator, and not that I'd want anyone to go through that. I really wouldn't. And not that I'd want to go through that kind of situation myself again. But I say, and I call him Daniel Bright in the story, I say, bless you, Daniel Bright. Because through him coming into my life, he actually showed me a lot of doorways. He taught me a lot. And when I look at what I learned from it, rather than what I suffered, I move that out of the way and I go, what was the gem that I can actually carry forward and I can help others with from this? He actually offered so much rich manure for me to fertilize in my own garden. And you'll get that when you read chapter 5. You know, once people read it, they'll go, ah, I now understand exactly what that man's saying.
It's important also, for there are so many people who remember their own abuse, and yet the rest of the world denies it. And so they begin to say to themselves, am I crazy?
Yep.
What you're saying is, no, you're not.
Yep. No, you're not crazy. And by giving voice to your hero and not being playing the tapes of the victim. You see, if you keep playing the tapes of the victim, then you'll just be stuck in the victim. Once you start playing the tapes of the hero, you can see where my victim self was and go, okay. And that was useful for a while because that got me to this point, but I don't need to stay on that train anymore. You know, I've got a different ticket. You know, I can move. I can go elsewhere. And that's freedom.
Are we ever done with our own stories? Can we ever put down the pen?
That's the beauty of it. I said to my daughter today, I said, you know, how exciting. You are the author of your story. You are writing it. So write it. Don't be afraid of writing your story. And of course, in all of our stories, there's going to be more challenges. You know, there'll be a horror story that comes up. It's what we do with it. So, you know, no, we're not done. We're on planet Earth, planet water, Corby. Whilst we're here, we're living stories. And we're constantly needing to go into the shadow. I will never stop going into my shadow because it's not done. Do I have all of the answers? No, I'm still, you know, like everybody else, seeking. However, I've discovered some wonderful tools, and what I know to be true is this book is a phenomenal tool. And if you're willing to work with the tools work.
If you're going to wrap up this wonderful, chewy, thought-provoking hour that we've spent, and I have had an absolute blast, what would be that wrap-up that you would want to gift the listener with, the person who's been hanging on to every word by their computer all night?
Well, I would say that the number one thing in this world is believe in yourself. The Celts have a saying, it's by the strength in my arm, by the truth in my heart, and the promise on my lips. What I know to be true is that the spiritual treasure trove is far greater than any of us have thought of for each of us. It's the mental bridge that brings it into manifestation into the physical. So it's important that we have the courage to believe that we are possible, because we are. It doesn't matter where you start. It's what you do along the way. And it doesn't matter what's happened. There are ways to transform. And we are the keys to that transformation. We need guides sometimes. And, you know, this book is a guide. You're going to come across many guides in your life. And when you do, access those portals, grab them and ride them for what they're worth. Because you're going to find at the end of the day, it was the courage that you had. It's your heart that will allow you to explore all of this. And you can. You are possible.
Gorgeous. Andrew, thank you so much. Again, if you want to dive into this amazing, delicious possibility of who you are, the book is called Powering Up Our Life Stories by Andrew Steed. And it's getting close to Christmas. You may want to get The First Santa, which is his previous book as well. I would suggest that you get it at his website. Yes, you can get it from Amazon, but why give them extra money for just being there? AndrewSteed.com. Andrew, thank you so much for being with us tonight. I have loved it.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me, Corby, and I look forward to doing it again sometime.
Next book, you're here. If folks are looking for me, you can always find me at firethroughspirit.com, Facebook, Fire Through Spirit, Twitter, Corby Mitlide. And, of course, the ever-present phone, 877-321-CORBY. That's 877-321-2672. So the challenge for you this week, after you turn off the radio, go get a pen. Go get a paper. Start writing down your stories. Don't judge them. Just love them. They're part of who you are. Once you get the story down, you want to reshape it, you can. You are the one telling your life to the world. Nobody else. Go tell stories. We'll see you next week.